All right, everyone. This is Sage with the Sage to Rage podcast, episode number 5. And I'm here with a very special guest, my client, Vince. And your last name?
Riccobona.
Riccobona, that's right. Vince Riccobona. And guys, this is a really exciting episode because Vince is actually the first home I'm ever going to sell. So real quick, Vince, I want to get rid of the boring real estate stuff first. But I like to put that out on my podcast, how I met you, why you hired us, and you know what result you were looking for that we were able to provide.
That's pretty easy. We first hired a real estate agent back in the fall, and she was part-time and nothing was happening. So we ended the contract with her, and I started looking up names, and I think I put something on the computer, and I got some bites from several real estate agents, you being one of them, and we interviewed about at least 3 or 4 different real estate people, and you and Daniel impressed us with what you had to say, what you were going to do, and so we signed with you, and the rest is sort of history.
Cool, perfect, guys, and really it's that simple. You know, I reached out to Vince, I called him, I sent him a postcard, you know, I followed up with him. He invited us for an interview. You know, I'm being a new agent. That's why I brought Daniel with me. You know, he has the backing behind him. He has the experience. He has the track record. So if you guys are a new agent, make sure to bring a more experienced agent with you when you guys are going on these listing appointments. Because, you know, being a new agent, it's like, well, you know, what can you do? It's like, well, hey, you know, I'm here just starting. But let me tell you, I'm on a team for a reason, you know. So we try to deliver. And but just wanted to get that out of the way real quick. So Vince is actually a police officer. He started in 1975, right? In February 1975. February. And he worked in, where were you at?
I was in the city of Capitola in Santa Cruz County, California.
Capitola in Santa Cruz, California. So yeah, tell me some stories, man. What was it like? What the academy, day one, what were you thinking when you first went through the academy? How much different is it than nowadays?
Well, we didn't go to the academy until after I got off training, which was rare back then.
Okay.
Nowadays, you go to the academy first.
Right, yep.
And a lot of the academy people pay their own way.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Because of budget situations with the police departments.
Yeah. So were you in that? You had to pay your own way?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, gotcha. No. We tested. I got hired with about 2 other guys. And I had been working security at Santa Cruz Boardwalk for about 3 years. Gotcha. So I had, and we were, we carried, you know, pistols, and it was a heck of an experience, and that's what really got me into law enforcement, because I loved the uniform, I loved the badge, I loved enforcing the laws, I loved meeting people, and so anyway, I got hired and got put with a training officer the first night, and during the summer months, or during the winter months at the boardwalk, we're just door shakers.
Mm-hmm.
Checking the businesses, making sure there's no vandalism.
Right.
So that first night, the first case I ever had in our department at those days, we every time you did something, there was an incident report, and you had to write something.
Right. Gotcha.
And
that's handwritten, right?
You guys. It was all handwritten, yes, and it had to be in pencil.
Right.
You couldn't use ink. You couldn't use whiteout. So my first incident number was going through the town village, and I found a door unlocked. And I was just thinking to myself that night, it was so fresh. I became a cop. And I'm shaking a door like I was on the boardwalk as a security officer.
Yeah.
So that was my first incident number.
Mm-hmm.
We went through three trainees. My first one was the for 4 weeks, and you go 4 weeks, and then another 4 weeks, and then the last 2 weeks you go back to your original to see if you've progressed.
Gotcha.
And at that time in the 75, 76, 77, Capitola was a sleepy little town.
Right.
It's a beach community, and all the bars were located pretty much right there on the beach. And during the summer months, it was busy. It was fights and DUIs and, you know, you name it, we handled it.
Right.
And during the winter months, quiet. Mm-hmm. Very, very quiet. I mean, you could go 2 weeks without a radio call.
Really?
It's all self-initiated activity. So we were death on DUIs, and our city had a reputation, our police department had a reputation that there was nothing too small that we wouldn't do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you had a license plate light out at 2 o'clock in the morning, mm-hmm. you're going to get pulled over.
Gotcha.
Otherwise, you're just going to fall asleep. I mean, right. you had to do stuff.
Right.
So we had a reputation for being, hardcore.
Yeah. Right.
But we made, from those stops, we made a lot of arrests, not just for DUI, but drugs and burglars and all sorts of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. A lot of those, a lot of those petty, or what people consider petty crimes, lead to some of the biggest arrests I've seen.
Yes.
I think my biggest bust was, it was just somebody, weaving in lanes. He ended up being drunk, but we got a big, hit a big old brick of cocaine in the backseat.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And I'm sure, you can hear story after story of, a cop pulls over someone for a license plate light, or whatever, the registration.
Yeah.
You find drugs or, they have warrants or the car is stolen or, whatever else. So it's,
I was pretty fortunate with training officers because they were all young.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I didn't get into the thing with, what it was like back in the 60s, even right. though we did a lot of calls in the county for the sheriff's office because mm-hmm. when they'd get stacked up, they needed help.
Right.
Back in those days, you had, for the entire county, you had 5 beats.
Right.
To cover the entire county. And Santa Cruz mm-hmm. PD, after midnight, would have, for their city, they'd have 3 beats.
Oh, really?
Yes. Wow. East, west, and central.
That's it?
And that was it. So you meet some of the old guys, and they look at the young kids and shake their heads. They don't think we're going to make it.
Right.
Not like in their day. And
Now
it's progressed to body cameras and all that other stuff.
So that is, did you guys have recording devices when you started or anything? Like VHS tapes? Or
back then, tape recorders were probably about 12 by 12.
Okay. Right.
They started coming out with the mini ones that we would carry.
Okay. And that would be like in the unit on the dash cam, or did you have any dash cam?
Just in your pocket.
Just in your pocket. Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. I mean, in those days, we had our overhead lights that were monstrous.
Right. The big old.
We had these toggle switches that were like 3 inches long. You'd hit this, and half the time it didn't work.
Yeah.
So
we still got some of those as loners. Oh, yeah.
When we got the first new light bars, it was like, they were like UFOs.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
3 different sirens. It was, it was.
Yeah.
It was cool. Different.
Uh huh. That's interesting. It's interesting. So, what'd your duty belt look like? What'd you have on it?
My duty belt?
Yeah, your duty belt. So you had your pistol, of course, your
spare mags. Pistol. We didn't have mags. We were carrying revolvers. We carried speed loaders, yes.
Oh, really?
We carried 357 magnums.
Oh, that's a good round.
And some guys carried the 4-inch, and I had a 6-inch. Back then, the big deal was Hoyt holsters. If any of these guys are older, they'll remember what a Hoyt holster is.
Oh, yeah.
It's a brake front holster.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which gives you a faster draw, da-da-da-da. But
right.
You carried your nightstick back then.
So was there any retention on that holster? Or
It was like spring.
Okay.
But it would just pop right open.
Okay. Oh, wow.
And some guys carried a clamshell. Uh-huh. Clamshell is when you reach inside your trigger guard, there's a button there that you press that button and flies open.
Oh.
Spring.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And they were cool.
Yeah.
But if you did it by accident, your gun would fall out and be on the ground. So I never went with that
one. Yeah, I wouldn't either. I'd definitely be that guy. Yeah.
So, so we carried 2 speed loaders.
Uh-huh.
So that we carried 18 rounds.
Gotcha.
And if you had a bigger waist, you could carry more. But being a young guy, you had a 30-inch, 29-inch waist.
Right.
2 sets of handcuffs and carried a sap.
Sap? You guys still had those. That's right.
You could still carry a sap.
Yeah, we weren't allowed to use those.
Right.
When we got
it. And we also had sap gloves.
Oh, yeah. I've heard the monkey gloves or monkey knuckles.
Because back then, we were getting a lot of riots and stuff. And
right.
A lot of protests.
Yeah.
And mainly the sap gloves were used when you had your riot stick,
mm-hmm.
the 36-inch one, and you would hold it. And if somebody tried to hit you with a 2x4 or tried to hit you, they'd hit the lead on your knuckles so you wouldn't drop it.
Gotcha.
And
gotcha.
They finally outlawed that. And, of course, they outlawed the sap.
Right.
I never used it,
uh-huh.
but
yeah,
it was comforting to have.
Yeah, it's one of those things. And I kind of get why they outlawed the sap. I mean, that's you know, I see that thing. I'm like, okay, you're like, especially since cops, you know, I'm sure defensive tactics are the same that they are now. You know, it's 2 weeks of training and you're supposed to be able to just take on whoever on the street, you know.
Chokehold.
Yeah, chokehold them, you know, and especially now with the way things are with UFC being so big and cage fighters being everywhere, you know, especially from my hometown. I'm from Albuquerque, so that's like the cage fighting central. So
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's a mecca MMA zone. Hmm. So, and being in the cage fighting community before I started being a cop, I went through the defensive tactics, and you know they were showing us the slap. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like this will kill you.
You can. You
know, yeah, that I think. Yeah. So I was like, okay, I think that one might have gone. You know, I mean, I could see some cops, you know, not knowing what they're doing and slapping someone on the head.
With the sap, you're supposed to go for bones.
That right? Yeah. Yeah.
And some of the guys says, well, the skull is a bone.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, in the thick of things, you just, you know, you strike where you strike.
Well, exactly, exactly.
But, yeah, it was... Yeah.
That's a serious weapon right there.
Very?
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're flexible, so you really get a snap out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I never used it.
Yeah, that velocity, though, man. That
Except was... once. I did use it once.
Really? Oh, yeah. Oh, nice, nice, yeah.
It's a 5150 is a metal case.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd gone berserk, and the guy was 6'8", and it had to be 270.
Oh, God.
And it was me. Yeah. In fact, I was just getting off duty when I heard the call duck come down, so I went with one of my partners, another new guy. So we're both like 5'9",
mm-hmm.
and we both weigh about 150, 155.
Right.
And we get there, and we see this giant. And, I mean, he's a religious nut.
Right, right.
And it was for domestic disturbance.
Mm-hmm.
And our sergeant walked in, who's a big man, and... He didn't even talk to the guy. The next thing I know, we're in a fight.
Right.
We didn't even get a chance to cool the situation down.
But, right.
We couldn't get the cuffs on. He was so big.
The wrist too thick?
With that, because we had to double him up.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And we couldn't get his arm behind his back.
Yeah.
I mean, there are two of us. And that's when I used the sap on his elbow.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
I hit his elbow like 5-6 times. And
yeah.
It was like he didn't feel any pain.
Oh, right.
And he finally weakened and, you know, threw him in the car and...
Gotcha.
Took him to the 51 to the mental hospital and for a 72-hour hold.
That makes sense.
That was the only time I ever used it.
I gotcha. Well, at least you got to use it once. You know, that's cool. That's cool. And yeah. I think since you know technology has come out, because you guys didn't have a taser, obviously, right? I mean,
no.
When did tasers come out? Is that when you?
No after? Taser. No.
When did you get out?
I got out May 1st, 2001.
2001.
Were they were just starting to come out with stuff like that.
Really?
Okay. In fact, I saw my first one up here. I saw one of the Reno cops had his duty weapon.
Right.
And then he had this yellow thing on the other side.
Yeah.
And I said, I asked him, I go, you know, I'm a retired cop. What is that?
Yeah.
He said, well, that's a taser.
Uh-huh.
I said, well, do you train a lot? I mean, suppose you draw the wrong one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's happened.
It has. It actually, the case was someone had their duty weapon right on the right side, like normal, and then they had a drop down holster.
Yeah, I've seen that too.
Yeah, they had that. So they told us when I was going through the academy, they don't advise that. You know, carry your taser on your left, so there's no way, you know, you're not going to cross draw and think it's going to be your gun.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But I could see how you could, you know, go for a drop down, think it's your, you know, or go meaning to go for your taser after you pull your gun, I think was the issue.
Yeah, I asked the guy, I said, well, if you get in a foot pursuit, you got two guns on one side.
Yeah.
I don't know how much that weighs, but it's got to tie you down a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, it's pretty light. I can't imagine it's much heavier than, you know, it's probably weighs about like a baton.
Huh?
You know, it's not super heavy. It's all plastic, you know, and just it's all wiring inside and just has a battery. I mean, that's the only mechanical part, so it's really pretty light. I think tasers are probably one of the most effective tools for law enforcement nowadays. I think that's probably, you know, save a lot of people's bones, you know, from getting hit with the sap. Because it's kind of, you know, you're like, hey, stop resisting. They're like, no, and then you shoot with the taser. And as long as you got those prongs in them, you know, you control that person, you know, so...
Well, you know, it brings up another subject when you brought up batons.
Uh-huh.
Let me pause for just a second.
All right. We're going to pause 1 second. All right, that's a baton.
Going through, yes. This is the first baton I ever carried.
Oh, that's a real baton. This isn't like my baton.
I mean, it's heavy.
Why is there so many dents in it, Vince?
You know what? I only used it 3 times.
Oh, yeah. Dude, this seems like a baseball bat.
It's pretty stout.
This is...
It's pretty stout.
This is
and
a
in the day, if you
baton.
See, there's
God
a hole
bless.
In it. There should be a hole somewhere right there. You have a leather thong.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
And you carried it with your thumb.
Right.
And if you watch the old movies where the street cop is twirling it and all that stuff.
Right, that's what that was.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then they came out with the grommet, so it would stay in your ring, your baton ring.
So that's the original baton.
So this is the original one. Yes.
Just a bat.
Yeah. And
that's awesome.
Whenever I got out of the car, I always carried it. Then we went to those, what are they called, PR... Well, they had the one with the handle,
yeah,
which I couldn't
PRCs
stand.
Or whatever the hell.
And then they came out with the metal one. That,
yeah, the collapsible.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we use.
I didn't like that either.
Yeah, I like that a lot better.
And that's, I'll tell you why. Cool. That, every cop knows the escalation of force.
Right.
Mere
right.
presence, you know, command bearing.
Right.
And, of course, the best of all is your mouth.
Right.
Silver tongue. You know, if you know how to talk your way down or talk a guy out, then just... That's the last of the escalation of force.
That's the goal,
He complies.
Yeah.
But what I liked about this is when you got out of your car and you walked up, they saw the nightstick.
Yeah.
They don't see that little hidden one.
No, yeah.
So
yeah.
To me, that's the escalation of force. By your presence with this nightstick, it signaled to somebody that he's not only going to have to fight, he's going to have to fight the baton.
Right.
But like I said, I used this twice on the boardwalk and once as a cop.
Gotcha.
So,
yeah.
I didn't get in many fights.
No, that's good. That's good. I mean, and you really shouldn't, you know, as a cop. I think, you know, like you said, we called it verbal judo.
Verbal judo?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Verbal judo. Yeah,
I'll never forget that class. Whoosh.
Yeah, huh? Exactly. Yeah.
Big
exactly.
Indian guy out of L.A.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
LAPD. Yeah. He had to be about 6'4 and about 240. He was in shape. And he was a jiu-jitsu guy,
mm-hmm.
you know, black belt and all this. And,
yeah.
You know, whoosha, let it go by you. Don't take it personal. And then you said the famous words, which meant that the next step is this guy's going to jail.
Right.
Is there anything that I can say or do
to
change your mind?
Yeah.
And as soon as you said that, your backups were sitting there and they're going,
yeah.
The next step.
Yeah.
And trust me, you know, we talked away on a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that's what a lot of people don't see. You know, people always see on the media, they see the worst incidences, you know, but they don't see all those times cops talk the incident down. You know, I mean, how many times have you, you know, you just talk somebody out of doing something stupid, you know, just talk them into handcuffs where they're thanking you by
absolutely.
The time they're taking you to jail. Thank you so much. You know, I don't know what you're
absolutely.
Saying.
No
problem, man. Happy to do it.
And that probably gets to your next subject about then and now.
Yeah, absolutely. What are your thoughts then and now? Being caught back then versus today, you know, when I get out, you know, I have a video recorder, goes a minute back. As soon as I turn my lights on, it turns on. You know, everything you do as a cop now is on video. So, you know, do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing? Do you think it helps police, or would you say there needs to be a little bit more privacy for the police?
Well, it takes away the cop's latitude to do different things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody talks about street justice.
Right.
And I'm not just talking about physical stuff, but there's a lot of verbal stuff that goes on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'd want that to have on tape.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's not yes, sir, no, sir. May you do this? Will you do that? Please.
Right.
You know, I mean, if you work the street, you get bad guys.
Right.
And they only know one language, and that's bad talk.
And
the stare downs and all the other stuff. So I don't know how they quite operate like that. And what I think the thing that upsets me the most is they don't accept the cop's word anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always these things, you know, I went to court many, many, many times, and I had great relationships with both the district attorney,
mm-hmm.
but more importantly with the public defender's office. You know, you go in with your word, your
mm-hmm.
honesty, and if you say something, a lie, or you perjure yourself, you're done.
Yeah, absolutely.
And trust me, the public defenders know it,
mm-hmm.
and they'll back you into a corner till they get you to say what they want you to say,
mm-hmm.
a lie.
Right.
And we fired a couple of guys over that.
Yeah.
Me personally firing a guy.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe it. I mean, it's kind of that thing. It's like, well, you know, Your Honor, this officer has lied before. How can we trust him today?
Absolutely.
Once you lose your word. I mean, and they always told us that.
Absolutely.
It's the most important thing you have
it
as
is.
A cop is your word.
Yeah, because if you're a young buck, you're out there arresting a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, they get to know you real fast.
Yeah.
And then you have, I'm sure they have it here in every courtroom, you have your professional court watchers. Mm-hmm. These old guys or old ladies, they have nothing to do, but they go to court and they listen to everything. And mm-hmm. I've actually conferred with a couple of those guys about my testimony.
Really?
How I did.
Yeah.
I mean, they're there every day listening.
That's a good point. Yeah.
And they'll say, well, you know, this or that. And, you know, you sort of heed their advice.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the body cameras, I don't know. I don't know. You know, I went down and talked to the captain that replaced me, and he said, we clear a lot of cases.
Yeah.
We clear a lot of officer complaints because we show the video to the complainant, and they look at it. I didn't realize I said that, or I didn't do this. Or,
right.
But
right.
there still has to be a way to communicate with bad people.
Right.
That they can understand. I don't know how they do that. I really don't.
Exactly.
So, but you know, all the shootings, and I think we had better officer safety when I was a cop.
Mm-hmm.
I really do.
Why is that? What do you think?
Because I watch Reno and I watch Sparks officers. I always slow down to see if they're okay. And some of them are just sitting in their car writing a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
For us, that was a no-no. You've never sat in your car and wrote a ticket. I don't care if it's raining.
Right.
You know, if it's raining hard, I just didn't pull anybody over unless it was, you know, reckless.
Right.
But I see them turn their back. I see people walk up to them. I see them, you know, doing their reports, and I see somebody walk by. I watch them, and they don't look in the mirror. They don't look to the sides. And I'm thinking, God, you know, you never know what's going to happen nowadays.
Right.
So I see cops on traffic stops not more than a foot apart from their the violator.
Mm-hmm.
It was still a no-no. Maybe it's because I was smaller, but I always kept 3 to 5 feet away, so I had a chance to react.
Right, right.
And I was always waiting for 3 from the ring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what 3 from the ring is?
3 from the ring, I
it's a baton.
Uh-huh.
So you always faced, it's on your left side, so you always were a T this way. And if the guy you made a move on, you went, one was into his gut.
Okay, yeah.
You grab it, the other one was overhead into his chest, and the other one was back down here.
Gotcha.
Into the gut.
Yeah.
And I only did it twice, and I only went ring once.
Just one ring.
One ring, boom.
And then he stopped.
It was it. The guy's on the ground.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, you hit him in the solar plexus with the end of a nightstick.
That's true, yeah.
But I see guys who are just, they're flat-footed.
Yeah, it's...
I see guys with long hair. I see women cops with ponytails.
Right.
Our first female officer, when she came to my team, I said, 2 rules. Your hair's up.
Mm-hmm.
And no perfume.
Right.
And she's like, well, some of the guys wear cologne. I go, they don't do that on my shift.
Mm-hmm.
We go into a dark building. They can smell you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get in a fight, the first thing the guy's going to do is grab you by that ponytail and whip you around.
Right.
It's not I wasn't discriminating on her.
No, it's all self keep her safe.
Yeah. And me safe.
Yeah, and you're safe.
So.
Because if she's in a bad situation, she's going to put someone else in a bad situation. So.
God, you see these videos now from the body cams with these cops just getting slammed and beat.
Right.
And
it's crazy. And I've seen, you know, I mean, just to touch on that point a little bit, I totally agree with you. I think officer safety used to be a lot better. I don't know what has happened, if people are just complacent or, you know, lazy or
well, you have to look at the standards of what they're hiring.
Well, that's true. No one wants to be a cop anymore. So
you know, to answer the question that you're going to ask, would I want to be a cop again?
Uh-huh.
I really loved it.
Uh-huh.
I really loved it.
Right.
I loved my city, and you know, our motto was "There's no job too small."
Right.
Then they took our dispatch away, and county had it, and they monitored. They somebody called. It's like, well, you know, this isn't a police complaint or a police investigation.
Right.
So they wouldn't send anybody. So then, you know, we as a sergeant back then. You get a call, and you get back to the office. Like, what's the problem? There's a citizen. So why didn't you send a cop? I go, nobody told me that you needed a cop.
Right.
And that's county comm. They're handling the whole county.
Right.
So anyway.
Yeah.
But it was good public relations. We went on every call.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know big cities can't do that.
Right. No.
But I also know that big cities, I've ridden with them, they have their slack time too.
Right.
Everybody does.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You go out of the barn, you get about 7 or 8 tickets, and then you relax.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And there's no quota.
Right. There isn't. There isn't. Unless you're. Was it for the federal grant money? We had quotas then. If the money was from the federal government, not from the city, the city couldn't require quotas, but if it was from the federal government and they said, hey, we're going to give you X amount of money because we want you to do a traffic blitz for Super Bowl or whatever.
Yeah.
Was it the same back then?
No.
Do you remember? No.
No.
There's no quotas at all. Now they got
it. We classified as a quota at our department.
Our
motor officers, and we only had two
because
we were small.
Right.
And so that one worked on each team, day shift.
Yeah.
They didn't handle any crimes.
Mm-hmm. Just traffic.
Traffic.
Right.
And if you want that job, it's day shift.
Right.
You know, we worked 10-4, so they worked 7 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Uh-huh.
3 days off, and you better be writing tickets.
Yeah.
Because there's somebody sitting there wanting to be a motor cop.
Right.
So, you know, and you'd look. As a sergeant, I kept track of them. So,
right.
You know, you only wrote... Let's say you wrote 60 tickets this month. I said, I'm a sergeant. I've written 40.
Right.
You know, there's something wrong here.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
So
there is accountability, of course, but no actual quotas.
No.
Yeah.
Write as many as you want.
Yeah.
But you better write something.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, you better be working, right?
You got
to
be working.
You to do a job.
Absolutely. You're supposed to, you keep track of the intersections and the streets that have accidents. You work them.
Right.
Look what's happening here.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have 14 pedestrians hit
last month? Reno's the highest pedestrian fatality rate.
It's ridiculous.
In the U.S., I believe.
I got rid of my motorcycle because of that.
Yeah.
And that was years ago.
Really?
Yeah. I was like, these people drive like nuts.
Yeah.
It's the Wild West.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy. So. I think a lot of it has to do with the downtown because of the casinos. They're open 24 hours a day, so people are drinking all the time.
But I want to know the stat on how many of these... pedestrian injuries have been related to the cell phones.
Yeah.
I really would like to know that.
Yeah.
Especially with kids. You know?
I almost died in Baltimore. I was on my phone. Almost walked in front of a bus.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Well, you know, every time I go to the store and park, I start backing up out of the grocery store and I look around and nobody's there. And all of a sudden, as I'm going back, I look again and there's some guy or lady on their phone just not... They don't even know what backup lights are, you know?
Right.
So you got to be careful.
Right.
And let's get to my favorite subject.
All right. What is it?
Canine.
Canine. All right. Perfect. Tell us what it
was
like.
I was a canine officer for 12 years.
Yeah.
I had two German Shepherds, and I had a Malinois for only a month because I got promoted out of the position. And
what did you like the best? What was the best to handle, even though you only had for a month? Malinois versus German Shepherd.
It just depends on the dog and the handler.
I got you.
The dog is only as good as the handler.
That makes sense.
And most of the time, the dog is smarter than the handler.
Right.
And, you know, I had two German Shepherds, and the first one I had was Amos, and what they called him, Famous Amos. I mean, he was a beast.
Mm-hmm.
And he did things on the job that he wasn't even trained to do. And we'd go to training, I did this. I didn't even give him a command. It's like, well, he's smarter than you.
Right.
But you know what?
Awesome.
It took me about a year and a half to get the dog program going.
Gotcha.
And a guy named Marv Gangloff from Santa Cruz PD started one down at Santa Cruz. And he had Utes. He was a German Shepherd, and he bred Utes by accident to another German Shepherd. And I got the pick of the litter, and I took Amos. And we went through the training. I paid for everything, everything you could imagine, and jumped every hurdle. Chief kept saying, well, you got to do this or do that. And then he goes, now I need you to write a 5-year, budget.
Right.
Budget for 5 years.
For the pay for the canine program.
Yeah, so I did that. And then we finally tested and he passed. And within about 7 or 8 months, we got our second one.
Okay.
Our assault against police officers went down to probably less than 1% when the dog was on the scene.
Really? Oh, man.
You know, we sort of copied San Diego PD because they had so many officer-involved shootings back in the day, 70s and 80s, that there was an outcry from the public. You know, it's like every night the cops shooting somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So they had one of the premier canine programs maybe to this day. I don't know. I've been out of it for so long.
Yeah.
And they cut their shootings probably 85%.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow,
it was huge.
That's really interesting.
But
I didn't realize it had such an impact.
The only time we'd get assaulted with the dog there is that the guy was so drunk or on drugs, he didn't even realize the dog was there.
That makes sense.
So yeah.
Like you were saying with the baton, you know, that show of force. What was it like when you showed up with a dog on scene?
It was awesome. Because he was black.
Yeah. Oh.
He was
man.
Black and white silver, teeth, yeah. And he was about 84 pounds. You know, these people walk up, oh, I got a German Shepherd 100 pounds. I go, yeah, it's about 25 pounds heavier. Right. Heavy, right?
Yeah.
But he was a, he hit like, you know, a linebacker. And we did all the demos to all the schools, to all the animal clubs. When I say animal, eagles and eagles, elk,
right.
You name it. And I'd be going through a shopping center. And there'd be kids running, Amos, stop, let me pet Amos. So I'd stop, and they'd all come up and, you know, and do all this stuff. It was great.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you did that for 12 years?
Did that for 12.
I gotcha.
Got him, and then we got the second one, Art, who was one of the first dogs out of Czechoslovakia.
Mm-hmm.
And he was built like a stud.
Yeah.
I mean, you could see the difference between breeding in East Germany and the Eastern Bloc, because you have a litter of six puppies.
Mm-hmm.
They, at one time, I think they said that a female could only really nurture three puppies, mm-hmm. and then the other ones are not good, so they put them down.
Oh, really? Wow.
They give them tests, and they find what they think is the best puppy.
Right.
And the female dog will take care of three puppies.
Right.
But you really see it. It's brutal, though. Mm-hmm. Brutal to do
that's
that.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, that's that was you know, then I got promoted to captain, and if I ever had to do that again, I'd have stayed back in rank and file.
Right. Yeah. I hear that. A lot. So, how did your department work? It was sergeant, then captain, or sergeant lieutenant?
No, it went sergeant, captain, deputy chief.
Okay, sergeant, captain, deputy chief. Yeah. Gotcha. So you're pretty high up. Then by the time you left, then.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I pretty much, we had two captains. There was no deputy chief anymore. And we had a captain of administration who was supposed to handle the Bureau internal complaints records.
Right.
But the chief had a problem. And so when he made me captain, I ran everything except six record clerks.
Oh, really? So you were a patrol side, the whole thing.
I had patrol. I had the detective bureau. I had the IAs. I had lifeguards. I had code enforcement. I had animal control. Like I said, I had everything except
six
women.
I can see why you went to
say. And the other captain was making more money.
Oh, of course, yeah. That's how it is, right?
Oh, yeah.
Always.
Right.
Always. That's so funny. Alrighty. Well, hey, Vince, I got just one more question for you. If you were 21 years old again, and how old are you now?
I'm going to be 72 in a month or two.
So 72, and you had to give yourself advice, and just you could tell yourself a couple things. What would you tell 21-year-old Vince?
Not to be so opinionated, but I'd still be a cop.
Yeah.
I know I learned early on from a really good chief, and I heeded his advice. And it's the advice I always gave a new sergeant or a new patrolman: always keep the friends that you grew up with. Don't get into the cop mentality where all you're doing is hanging out with cops.
Right.
And if you want something done in the department, if you want to bring a project, find professional reasons to do it, not personal reasons.
Right. I like that.
And 9 out of 10 times you'll get it.
Mm-hmm.
So other than that, maybe I would have worked for UPS. I could have been a millionaire.
Yeah.
Back in those days after, you know, Vietnam, I mean.
Right.
You know, UPS, when you didn't take vacation, they gave you stock.
Oh, really?
I played golf with a bunch of guys. They're all millionaires.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
They start UPS.
Just UPS. They become a manager and they go up. And
yeah.
A lot of them are worth like $10, $12 million. I swear to God, I just looked at them. It's like, I tried.
Yeah. But
back then in the 70s with Vietnam getting over with, to get a job, an interesting story. I go to Cabrillo Junior College to test for the sheriff's office in 1974.
Mm-hmm.
There were over 1,000 applicants.
Wow.
For one opening.
Jeez.
So you stood there, and then, you know, you get your results, and they have, back then they had three lists.
Mm-hmm.
You had a list for females. You had a list for Hispanic or Black,
mm-hmm.
and then you had a list for Caucasians.
Mm-hmm.
And you got an extra few points if you're a veteran.
Gotcha.
So I finished fourth. But at that time, they were hiring diversity.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, so it's tough to get a job. And UPS was the same way.
Really, yeah.
I mean, not testing that way, but it'd be 3,000 guys looking for a job.
Jeez.
Because you got you know, tens of thousands of guys getting out of service.
Right, yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, it was tough to get a job. It was,
right.
My God.
Yeah.
But, you know, I persevered and I got lucky.
That's awesome.
I had my application out all over California, Washington, Oregon.
When
I haphazardly went down to Capitola, which was like a mile from my house, and took a mm-hmm. test and passed and got hired. So,
wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
If they hadn't hired me, maybe I would have been a millionaire today.
Maybe you would have.
But these guys are making big money now.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. When I got hired, it was about $750 a month.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. That's not much.
And they supplied you with a gun.
Mm-hmm.
You bought all your leather gear.
Right.
You paid for there was no bulletproof vest.
Right. Oh, gosh.
None.
they weren't even invented yet? Or what?
Didn't
have them?
I don't think they had them in 75. If they did, they were really bulky.
Right.
You know, the big vest was Second Chance. Second Chance came out with it. With the first vest, I think.
Right. No, you're right. Yeah.
And then there were others, and when they came out, for bargaining, we gave up money, salary,
mm-hmm.
for them to buy us bulletproof vests.
Interesting.
And then the state made it mandatory.
Wow.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, man. No.
But now they wear the bulletproof vest over their uniform. We always wore it underneath.
Yeah.
I still don't understand the logic of wearing it over the uniform.
I don't know.
It just like gives them a target. Where, this is where you don't shoot.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, so I get the functionality of it. If it's like with the TAC vest where you can, you know.
Yeah, I see that.
There. That's nice.
That's nice.
I mean, I'm sure your hips, you know, like me, man, running in a car for 10 hours a day, you know, whatever. Your hips get real sore. That's a lot
of weight
on the duty belt. So, but I've seen some of those, you're right, where it's just the vest, but it's like.
Just a vest.
It's just the vest.
Because you know, I turned in two old.
You're right. It's like, well, don't shoot me here. You know.
Sparks PD came to the house because I had two old rifles I had to get rid of. They were rusted out. They were really, really old. Mm. So they came to the house, and this guy's from SWAT. You know, it's like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and it was warm, and he's dressed in his SWAT gear.
Right.
And big guy.
Uh-huh.
Big guy.
Uh-huh.
And God, he had all this stuff on. I'm thinking, jeez, man.
They were ready to come get your guns.
We didn't do that until, you know, it's like, hey, it's the SWAT call, because I was in SWAT for a while. It's okay, like, okay, go in the trunk and start gearing up. These guys are wearing it
just around
10 hours a day. You know, they better be in shape.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. There was. I'll tell you that there was no gut on this kid.
Yeah, I bet. I bet.
And that's another pet peeve.
Yeah.
I can't stand looking at cops with a big gut.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, too. I mean, one, because it can put someone else in a dangerous situation.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, because you're not going to be able to help somebody that needs it. I mean, two, if you get attacked, you're going to get winded or quick, you know?
Yes.
And I've seen the same thing with, you know, female cops that are small. You know, they don't jump in the fight, and they just watch the guy get his ass kicked. You know, like a male cop and a female cop go to call.
Yeah.
Male will get into a fight, he's getting his ass handed to him, and female's like, well, I'm too small to really help, so I'm going to stay back here.
It's funny you say that. I just saw that on YouTube. Somebody sent it to me.
Really? Well, maybe it was the same video, yeah.
She was like running around the guy. She didn't know what to do.
Yeah, she had no idea.
And this guy's getting, I mean, he's fighting for his life, and two citizens stop.
Yeah.
Run out there and help him, and she's still running around like.
Yeah, yeah.
Her and I would have had words at the station.
Yeah, yeah, it's just like, hey, do what you can, you know, and same thing, you know, with the fat guy, it's just like, you know, there's got to be some standard, there has to, you know.
You know what, and it's just not about women. We had a guy in our department.
Oh, dude, I know some women that would kick the shit out of men. It's not the women, you know.
No, it's not, but we had a guy, he was 6'4", built, he's a big bodybuilder,
so
he was a coward.
Yeah.
I rode him up like 3 times and nothing happened.
Yeah.
I mean, I rolled up on a scene, I see two of my guys fighting this Samoan.
Yeah.
And he's standing there looking.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, I jump on the pile, we get him handcuffed, I go, meet me in the office.
Right.
He meets me in the office, I said, what, are you a coward? You see the guy, well, I didn't know, what do you want me to do? You do what I just did, you jump on him. right? Yeah. My God, you know, and couldn't get rid of them.
Jeez. Yeah.
So it's not just about women, because...
No, you know, I'm not 100%.
They know. It was just that video I saw. But my eyes were like...
Sometimes I see that, yeah. It's like, I mean, get in there. Dude, there would have been words. Yeah, no.
My supervision technique was...
Yeah.
See me in my office.
Yeah.
And we'd talk.
Yeah.
And I'd supervise, and I'd counsel.
Right.
And we'd get out, and I'd call him and say, hey, let's go have a cup of coffee. And we'd get there, it's like, sorry, I thought you were pissed.
Yeah.
I'm not pissed.
Yeah.
I'm doing my job.
Right.
I like you.
Yeah.
But I got to, right. You know, I got to do what I got to do.
Right.
People don't understand that.
Yeah.
Instead of going back to, hey, you know what that guy did?
Right.
So, anyway.
Yeah.
And I was no angel, trust me.
Right. I think, you know, very much a sergeant makes the team, you know, it really does.
The best job on the force.
What made
it good for me was I was also a sergeant and a canine.
There you go, yeah.
So I handled canine, I handled my team.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's awesome.
All I wanted to do was work nights.
Right. Yeah.
That's all I wanted. Leave me alone at nights and no lawsuits and chief, everything's going to be, every T's crossed and every I's dotted. And,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
It was fun. Yeah. I had great teams.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a sergeant's a huge part of that too. So
if you're a hard charger,
yeah.
All the hard chargers want to work for you.
Yeah. Problem now though, all the sergeants nowadays are pussies too, so
well, you know what? I won't go there, but I'll say this. Just about every bad sergeant or pussy sergeant always met a lieutenant or captain.
Right. That's a good point.
They were test takers.
Yeah, they were.
They were test takers.
That's so true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or training officers. That's what we call them.
Yes.
So never on the streets. They're always at some training.
Hey, trust me. When I left the job, I tried to fire the guy. I still have his some paperwork on him that I look at. They promoted him to captain.
Uh-huh. Of course.
It was the coward.
Really?
The guy that couldn't make a decision.
I gotcha.
And I just shook my head. I was laughing.
Yeah.
And I meet up with the guys at my retirement dinner, and they're looking at me and say, Cap, can't you come back? I said, no.
Yeah.
I said, you know, if he asks for a decision, he doesn't give it to you. You got to go above his head, man. It's your life.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's your life and it's your teammate's life.
Mm-hmm.
I'll get back to you on that.
Yeah.
Well, we got a hostage situation.
Kind of need some. Yeah.
Anyway, do I miss it? I miss the hot calls. I miss being in charge.
Right.
Other than that, all the other crap.
Nah, could do without it.
No. These guys have a lucky year, though.
Yeah.
These people, they get shootings. They're not protesting.
Yeah.
On cops shooting people. Mm-hmm. Our city was the same way. They loved us.
Yeah.
Go across the border to Santa Cruz City. No way.
Yeah.
Totally different. You have an officer involved shooting, man. They hang the guy to dry.
Yeah.
So it's amazing how different communities are.
That is true. Yeah. And, you know, my community, we didn't have too much backlash. Like, we had some hippies and stuff protest, you know, but nothing crazy. But for the most part, you know, people were grateful, happy for us to be around. You know, I never worked in a department where people, like, hated you.
They loved us. They really, really loved us.
And I think that's a lot of communities.
It is.
You know, I think that's the part that a lot of people don't see. You know, they're like, oh, it's so anti-cop. And I'm like, most people are pretty pro-cop.
Yeah.
You know,
I used to stop on day shift.
Criminals aren't, you know?
Day shift, there'd be a basketball game at somebody's garage. I'd jump out, take a few shots, pick. That horse would play cat. The day after Christmas, because I was usually on day shift then. Shit, I'd go through the neighborhoods. What do the kids have today? I'd jump out.
Mm-hmm.
It's like remote control stuff. I'd be out there doing stuff.
Right.
Dad'd come out. It's like, is there a problem? It's like, no, I want one of these things.
Yeah.
I don't want my kid to see this. This is expensive.
Right.
Oh, it was a kick.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So,
that's
fun. I'd take the dog out. Because I taught him how to play football.
Mm-hmm.
And so I put him at fullback position. I'd down set, and he'd be sitting there. And I'd go, hut, and he'd come running through, and I'd fake the football to him.
Uh-huh.
And we got out about 4 yards. I'd toss it to him, and he'd catch it.
Oh, nice.
And pop it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's when I went to a Nerf ball.
Ah, yeah, good call.
So, and the kids would just love it.
Can I
do that? They said,
no.
Because if you hand off the ball and you don't know when to take it away, he'll take your hand.
Right, yeah, he's taking your arm with you.
So anyway.
All righty. Well, hey, Vince, it's been a blast talking to you, man. And thanks for sharing some of your stories and some of your insight over what you've learned. And anything else you wanna add before we...
Just I'm impressed with you and Dan and your organization. What's it called?
It's the Puzz Team.
And EXP?
EXP Real Estate.
Yeah. Yes, all those sir. People, whoever listens to this, interview your real estate agent.
All right. Hey, we appreciate that. And what a better note to end on. So thank you, Vince.
All right. Now I'm going to show you.